Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Schiller. In this episode, available in audio and video, so hello, I'm now waving if you're watching. If you're just listening, then you can imagine a very casual wave. Anyway, this episode is my final interview from PyTorchCon back in Paris in April, and it is with Doug and Ricardo, who are both from Red Hat, talking about how they used VLLM Omni for video generation and how they created the setup and the model training, etc., etc. It's a nice technical talk from the two of them, so please enjoy. And if you're watching the video, you can see the wonderful venue in Paris, I think Station F from memory, in the background and the conference happening around it. Thank you to FlexClip for supporting the show, which is an online video maker and editor tool for all sorts of use cases and purposes. I've been experimenting with it for doing some of my transcriptions, for example. If you're interested and want to throw a few cents the show's way, then head over to go.christianschiller.com/FlexClip. Okay, time for the interview.
Ricardo and Doug. It's one of these annoying times where when you had your talk was when I was speaking to someone else. So I wasn't able to make it, but the topic seems super fascinating. Video generation as a service. And I mean, video generation has existed in the kind of AI space for a little while, but you know, it's very computationally intense and expensive and some companies give up on it. And so what made you want to give it a go?
The number one for me was the possibilities to actually be able to do this with open source software, and the fact that there was recently some released weights for a model called LTX2. There had been some kind of like real furious development on VLLM Omni, which is built on top of VLLM. And I saw it as an opportunity to contribute and to experiment. And, you know, we had been looking at the potential for product based on open source for omnimodality. So generative AI across a number of modes being video, audio, imagery, text, all of the above.
Similar or...
Yeah, similar. The focus of my team is basically different model architectures beyond autoregressive transformers. So we are looking into traditional diffusion models based on like convolutional neural networks, but also diffusion transformers. And VLLM Omni came out by the end of last year, and it was a very exciting project and an exciting community, and there was like a incredible fast development in the community. So we just wanted to try and had some fun developing this demo.
And I mean, what kind of hardware do you need to run on? I'm guessing not just a.
It is surprisingly, the LTX2 video model, you can actually get generations out of it on consumer grade equipment. So people are using this with, you know, your kind of like NVIDIA 50 series GPUs. In our case, we do have access to more commercial grade hardware, which was convenient. But I think that I got in trouble on my team for like wasting GPU time on a B200 with doing this because I had access and it was convenient. But I think I did most of the work on A100s.
Okay. And what kind of video did you get out? Like, is it seconds, minutes?
So you're talking about in the like the sweet spot would be like in the 10-second kind of a range. And one of the kind of limitations that I was running into is once you got to about the like 20 second range, things went from weird to super weird. One of my favorite kind of side effects would be what people are calling spaghetti limbs, which is where you get kind of the like ever expanding limbs. But yeah, there is kind of a breakdown at this point. It's honestly incredible what you can do with an open weights model today. And this open weights model does audio and video.
Okay.
And actually, a few weeks after we submitted the talk, there is now a new version of the same model, of the LTX2 model. There's the 2.3 version. We haven't tested it yet, but I think, you know, maybe it has improved since then.
And when it comes to video and the audio, maybe this is a dumb question. Was it in sync?
Overall, yes. Okay. And I would say, at least from my experience, I didn't do a ton of audio experimentation, in part because my initial trials with it was all stuff that we built, not from scratch, but using the provided libraries for LTX. So we kind of had like just a prototype to work with, and the first iteration was video only. Yeah. So I didn't really get to audio until the end. I would say it was better than I expected, although I would say that music was a little bit weird, like from some of the more like commercial offerings, I'd say that maybe the audio was like a little bit better. But the fact that we're getting to the point where we have open weight models that are capable of both of these was pretty exciting.
Obviously, 10 seconds is not a tremendous amount of time for some in-depth storytelling, but what kind of, can you get like multi-track audio? Can you transition between scenes in 10 seconds, I know. But like, what's the kind of, the complexity of the narrative I could go to? I don't know.
I think from our perspective, we didn't have a look too much into the video generation itself, but the infrastructure.
Okay. Well,
So like we are engineers and we are not video designers and you know so on, but it's interesting because we focus, for example, on the inference server, VLM Omni, and all these things, but we kind of discover exciting projects like Comfy UI we didn't know about, and we believe that it's kind of the new paradigm for video generation, right? It's an open source project that allows you to connect boxes and different types of artifacts. And it's very interesting.
Totally. I do have kind of my own take on the like storytelling and this sort of like generative narratives that people will create. Is so one thing I do think is fairly powerful is the idea of image to video generations, where you may be able to come up with workflows where you take a series of images, either real or generated, and go image to video in order to get like some amount of consistency between scenes if you were going to knit these together. And I also think that we're going to start to see stuff that right now would be like a little bit more of a manual process, where you're using something like a Comfy UI, you're putting together these nodes to create a workflow. I think that in the future we may wind up seeing agentic integrations with these type of workflows, and I think that we're going to start to see the ability to create something that kind of transcends your like 6 second generated. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and then I guess at a certain point, you know, you could get simpler video, like interstitials, animations, the kind of stuff that people sort of almost blink and they miss anyway. It's probably is better for that kind of use case.
Yeah, your B-roll, if you will, yeah, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's come back. You mentioned you were more interested in the setup, the hardware, the software. You mentioned Comfy UI, which is interesting because I feel like I was looking at Comfy UI a little while, like ages a little while ago in AI terms.
Yesterday.
So it seems like it's interesting to hear that term again. What did you end up with? You mentioned some of the GPUs, but other sorts of infrastructure like Linux, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of setup did you, I'm assuming Red Hat, but what kind of infrastructure did you end up firing up that you found worked best for the process?
Yeah, from our side, it's basically like in exploration phase, but something we did in my team was, for example, to add VLLM Omni as the backend of Comfy UI and have Comfy UI for basically the front end or UI. But, we as Red Hat provide OpenShift, Kubernetes, our own Kubernetes distribution. So we were able to run VLLM Omni on Kubernetes and have some kind of auto-discovery mechanism to let Comfy UI discover those nodes. And it was like very easy to set it up because Kubernetes handles the allocation of GPUs, and then you have VLLM Omni, Comfy UI. So it kind of it's like a very good workflow for production systems.
Okay. Any surprises in that you came across? Or
we had to write our own auto-discovery mechanism. Okay. So it was like part of the project we did. But no surprises.
Okay.
Yes, similarly, I mostly used a containerized setup as well. And for the most part, I have to say that I found it overall convenient to use. The one thing that I really did kind of notice is that there's kind of a potential gap here in service. So if the way that VLM Omni works today is that chances are what you're going to do is on a single node, you're going to have a spin up of a single model. And it might be that you have a node and it has, say, 8 GPUs and you use a GPU or two for a model. And then you'll have another instance, which may be another model. So if I had, for example, one instance that was LTX2 video model, and then I had another instance that might be, say, multimodal. So just as a distinction here is the LTX2 is really kind of like diffusion for each frame. And if we had something like a Qwen Omni running on another node, or maybe even you had something like a, say, Flux or, another diffusion model, say, for single images, and you would have one API endpoint that would be videos, and then you'd have another one that would be images. The question remains, how are you going to get those requests to the right node? And I think that in the exploration that Ricky is doing with his team, I think that we'll probably see a further progress for how we can actually, orchestrate something like a video service at scale with having like a better routing and maybe a better story for orchestration.
Like, forgive my ignorance, because it's been one of those things where I've been intending to check it out and haven't got around to it yet. Is this the place for something like OpenRouter, or is that kind of what it's designed for?
And you know what? I have to say, I am familiar with OpenRouter, and I've certainly heard about people using it for, say, their like homebrew agentic setups, like OpenClaw, NanoClaw, Hermes kind of thing. So I have meant to look into it further. However, I do think that kind of technology is a hint at how we could get it's these things like, to the right place.
Keeping on Kubernetes,
You know what? You're
data to an IP address, and you wanted to
Total.
It's nothing new.
Service mesh.
Service mesh.
Yeah, there you go. And you know, you're justified because there's a million and one different service meshes. But yeah, I think that it's like, what is this stack going to look like, and what kind of technologies come out as like the community darlings to use?
But for example, sorry,
just very, very quickly, Doug, I'm just a bit worried that we're just getting shirt noise.
I don't want shirt noise.
Related to the Open Router project, one of the projects that also came out from Red Hat's Office of the CTO was the semantic router in VLLM ecosystem.
Okay. Yeah.
It was mentioned by NVIDIA CEO, Microsoft CEO, and that the semantic router is basically allows you to redirect the prompts based on the semantics, on the meaning of the prompt, but it also supports multimodality. So if you have a query to generate a video or an image, it will know where to send that. That request.
Interesting. It's not even something you thought of yet. Like, but again, a theme of this afternoon of conversations I've had with people has been stuff that we did in the old computing days. And I'm putting that in quotes because who knows? We're still remain to be seen old residue, et cetera, et cetera. We're now kind of just bringing forward into putting them on top of models instead. Service meshes, DS. I'm having complete blanks on everything. You know, programming language specific.
DSL?
DSL, sorry. DSLs, these kind of things that we used to do on more traditional computing are now like basically recreating equivalents for the other world. So the same problem is just somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay. It never even occurred to me, you know, I guess maybe a subtext of what I was hearing you say, and maybe I'm completely misunderstanding it, is that even though you have models that are omni-modality, you don't necessarily want to say, hey, you, do everything. You actually kind of want to maybe even have different instances doing different bits.
And at least the way, so this is something that we explored in our talk a little bit as well, is that right now in VLLM Omni, partially because it's super new and it's moving super fast, there's kind of some like funky architecture in some ways, which is that we have this idea of multimodal models, which are kind of packed in stages, right? So like a Qwen Omni, you'd have like a like video, image, text, audio kind of stages. However, VLM Omni also supports both plain old diffusion style models for still images, and then also video models, which some of which are like diffusion frame by frame kind of a thing. And in those cases, not all endpoints work for all things. So like a Qwen Omni, you can have a like kind of text input, and just from your kind of like slash completions endpoint, and you can get any kinds of the output from that input. However, something like LTX2, you kind of only have the like slash video generation endpoint.
All right, I'm gesturing to the outside window. We're here at PyTorch Europe. What was your experiment, your project's interaction with PyTorch? Where did that come into things? Hopefully it did. I don't know. Maybe it didn't.
No, well, it does. It does in a big way, and I definitely want Ricky's take too. Okay. But something that I personally love about the idea of VLLM Omni is that it builds on VLLM itself. Like, if you go and look at the Docker file for VLLM Omni, it says on line one from VLLM, right? So it starts there, and VLLM is something that I know and love in my team. It's part of my day-to-day work, and it's part of my day-to-day upstream contributions. And VLLM, would not exist without PyTorch. And this is something that in my world, I spend a lot of time on VLLM CI. And in the upstream, we have a close relationship with the PyTorch maintainers. And it's really important to our own release cycle of VLLM itself. So I'm really excited to be here at PyTorchCon because these are people that make the products that make my upstream contribution life.
Yeah, for me, you know, I'm going to talk more about the conference and the community because as a European, I you know, I'm very, very excited to that is the first time that PyTorch is in.
I didn't realize the foundation is only a year old.
That is outside the Silicon Valley and the US, so I'm really excited. And I like the vibe in the conference because it's still, you know, all about technology, about the, you know, engineering. The discussions are really technical and I don't know.
I enjoyed the fact that about 10 minutes into the keynote, I was already a bit lost. Which actually was a good thing in my mind. Because so many keynotes are some bigger events. You're like,
Yeah.
I was confused in a good way. So you did sort of mention that you were looking to maybe see if this could be a product to a degree and without going into too much like commercial sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera. What did you learn as part of maybe doing that process? Like taking it from an experiment to something usable by more people.
Yeah, I think Red Hat is well known for the open source development model and delivering enterprise software in the end. So we are very used to you know, grabbing an open source project, looking into how we can contribute to the project and finally have a base of maintainers that, you know, can allow us to create a product out of it. And with VLLM Omni, of course, it needs to have some interest from customers in the end. So there are people interested in having the same experience that you have with ChatGPT or Gemini, you know, generate images and video and stuff like that. So we want to replicate that in the open source world. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think this has been the, even with some of the image generation, but specifically with the video generation, OpenAI has already kind of said they're not really going to pursue the video. We talked a little bit about, you know, PowerPoint videos or some, you know, stuff like that. But like, do you worry that there is much of an actual use for 10-second videos for enterprises? I don't know.
I do think that with generative AI for imagery in general, I do think that there are commercial use cases, and especially for commercial artists.
They're definitely commercial. Like I have Adobe Premiere, and Adobe has actually done quite a good job. Some people are annoyed by it, but I find it quite good of bringing in those generative AI features into their products, because it's literally where you want it.
Totally. And that's like an awesome like opinionated stack for it. I think that we're at the beginning of the story with video especially. But I am seeing at least the like glimmer of hope that there's some democratization for this kind of technology, that it's not necessarily just available to like the biggest of the big players, and that kind of folks at all levels could get into this. But I do think that there are some like pretty significant gaps for like how commercially useful it is today. I think that there is some possibility for like having like some kind of like maybe like filler type of content, think would be all right. I think getting to a feature length film is a little out there at the moment.
Imagine the compute power I need to do.
Yeah, seriously.
Although, I mean, again, though, I don't know if you remember back in the days of things like Flash, and you had the whole mind-blowing idea of tweening with frames of, like, start point, end point, fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
That kind of thing becomes interesting. You know, if you're a Pixar making an animation and rendering stuff just takes forever, and actually the ability to kind of offset that just filling in the gaps bit is kind of an interesting, maybe, I don't know, who knows? I don't know.
I've certainly seen people get fairly excited with some of these kind of demos that you run into online that are like image to video generation, and they tempt you to put in like maybe like an old family photograph.
That's disturbing, but
certainly like some interest in seeing like, oh, that, like I have some connection to that. But yeah, don't get me wrong, there's a big uncanny valley effect with that kind of stuff where it can go to creepy really quickly.
Oh Lord, in the middle of that I had a great wrap up question and now it's completely escaped me. So you mentioned that Red Hat generally does a lot of these experiments kind of in the community, etc. So if someone wanted to go and recreate some of your ideas, is there a blog post, a repository, or what's it meant?
Yes. So we, as part of our talk, and I'll make sure I follow up with you to get this, is we've got a GitHub gist, and everything that we did is completely open source, and you can pick up and you can try it today. No guarantees on the consumer grade hardware for at least what I did, but I do believe it's possible, and I believe it should be achievable, and even potentially with like a cheap rental of commercial grade GPUs, you know, I'm talking like under $5 an hour kind of a thing. You probably could give it a shot, but we've got all the resources lined up for you. And the good news is this community has moved crazy fast in the last couple months from when we put together the talk proposal to today. A lot of the gaps that we found were actually filled. And so a lot of the technology is actually pretty approachable, and people can get to creating weird and spaghettiized video today. So it's totally possible and all totally open. So
we're not having Will Smith eating spaghetti, which
there's a Wikipedia article about the like Will Smith eating spaghetti-o thing, or eating spaghetti thing, which I just thought was a Reddit meme, and I went and Googled it, and then I'm like,
to standard benchmark.
Yeah, it's now it's really a benchmark. Yeah, it's
amazing to show how quickly things have become, because it was laughable, and now it's like, it's not great, but it's passable.
Yeah,
it's gone from laughable to passable. Full of good quotes. There you go. Okay. Cool. Awesome. I look forward to seeing that. Nice to just have a kind of pure for kicks experiment and talk about it. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was my interview with Doug and Ricardo from Red Hat, talking about their video generation as a service setup that they covered in great detail at PyTorchCon back in Paris in April. Thank you very much for joining me. You can find more about the show at christianchiller.com/podcast. And if you are watching on the video, you know what to do. Share, subscribe, etc. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge, and see you or speak to you next time.